You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 12th of October, 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today, as promised, I thought we would take a look at the new Higher Education Freedom of Speech Bill, which the government have produced and is supposed to strengthen the freedom of expression rules in universities. Now, this bill started in the House of Commons. It's had its first reading, second reading, committee stage, report stage, third reading. It's now passed into the House of Lords. It's had its first reading, second reading, and it's now at the committee stage. We have two more stages, the report stage and the third reading, before amendments are considered and then the bill finally gets royal assent. And I've been taking a look at Toby Young's Free Speech Union, and they're very pleased with this bill. They think it is a good thing. And after having a look through it myself, I do think it is going to help, because we do have a serious problem with people self-censoring at universities and with academics at universities, right-leaning academics at universities, being unable to invite the guests that they want into the university to speak, because the students will deplatform them and the university will say, well, no, we're just not going to have that person here because it will upset certain groups of students. So this bill means that if somebody is invited to speak at a university and it gets stopped because of the left-wing students, then the university will be fined. And it creates a free speech champion that will decide on these cases, and it means that universities actually have to promote freedom of speech. And they are talking about controversial viewpoints there. That's actually written into it, that this is controversial viewpoints which challenge the orthodoxy. Well, let's have a look at what Wikipedia has to say about it. The Higher Education Freedom of Speech Bill is a proposed Act of Parliament of the United Kingdom that would impose requirements for universities and student unions to protect freedom of speech. And they've included student unions there because student unions exclude pro-life groups. If you're against abortion and you want to set up a group, they will exclude you from being a part of the student union. So this will force the student unions to allow these groups, which are now seen as controversial, to be affiliated with them. The legislation would allow speakers to seek compensation for no platforming through a new statutory tort, empower the Office for Students to levy fines on infringing institutions, and establish a new ombudsman or free speech champion charged with monitoring cases of no platforming and academic dismissals, because we also have instances of academics that have been sacked, basically, for having a different opinion to the orthodoxy. The statutory tort, that will be a statutory fine. So there will be a certain amount and a statute. It will just go to the magistrate's court and the university will get fined. These measures are intended to protect academic staff, students and visitors who advocate controversial viewpoints. And it has been pointed out that these are controversial viewpoints that are being protected here. If we cannot hold a controversial viewpoint, then we do not have freedom of speech at all. And I was talking about the Holocaust denial side of this yesterday, because it looks like it will protect that. But then when you think about it, the actual term itself, Holocaust denial, means denying that the Jews had a bad time during World War II. And if you were to say that the Jews didn't have a good, the Jews were lying when they said they had a bad time during World War II, that would be hate speech, because you're showing hostility to the Jews there. But if you were to talk about World War II in a way that was sympathetic to the Jews, then you could have the historical revisionism and it wouldn't be Holocaust denial. So when the politicians say, well, Holocaust denial is not, although it's not illegal in this country, it would not be allowed. That's what they're meaning by it. They're meaning because if you're showing hostility to Jews whilst you're doing your historical revisionism, then that would be classed as hate speech. But so long as it is just genuine, objective World War II historical research, then that cannot be said to be anti-Semitic. It cannot be said to be hate speech, especially if you're showing sympathy to the Jewish position, which is how we should try to be. We should always try to be objective and to look at the position from all different viewpoints. So, and we try to do this here at Radio Albion. Well, the background to this bill: no platform policies aiming to deny certain public figures the opportunity to speak have existed among British student unions since the 1970s, with the National Union of Students adopting its version in April 1974. So this has been going on for a long time. They've been deplatforming people, preventing people from speaking at the universities, but it has got really bad over the last 10 years. These policies formalised an approach developed by the anti-fascist student left in the late 1960s. So it's basically Antifa. It's the Antifa groups that carry out violence against people and public property, and it's their views that have become institutionalised in the universities, in the student unions, that has actually led to this. In the 1990s and 2000s, no platforming efforts focused on the far-right British National Party, as well as Islamist groups, particularly Hizb ut-Tahrir. And when you think about that, the British National Party, the BNP, they had two elected European Union MPs. They were not breaking the law in what they were saying, and yet they were deplatformed from speaking at the universities. Which meant that the left-wing people at the universities did not have their views challenged in any way at all. And of course they would say, well, the BNP, they're fascists, so we have to oppose them. But if you're not going to have a debate with them, then surely that means that you're too frightened to have the debate and the BNP have won. If you're just going to resort to name-calling, calling the group racist, Nazis, neo-Nazis, whatever, white supremacist, and saying, well, that's the reason for banning them from speaking at the university, that is effectively saying that you admit you have lost the argument. I mean, ad hominems are the least graceful way to admit that you've lost the argument, because instead of actually coming out with a rebuttal of what the person is saying, you're just calling them nasty names, which is what you do when you don't actually have an answer for what is being said. So it should mean that so long as people are staying within the law, they should be able to hold the right-wing views, they should be able to hold nationalist views, so long as when they express them, they are not being hostile to any groups with protected characteristics. In the 2010s, however, activist attention came to focus more on public figures viewed as transphobic, and some journalists and politicians argued that no platform policies were being extended well beyond the far right. And that's what a lot of this is concentrating on, because we've seen feminists that have been deplatformed from universities, the so-called trans exclusionary radical feminists, TERFs, people like Germaine Greer, people like the author of the Harry Potter books. So many of these feminists have now actually been deplatformed for saying that there is a difference between men and women and that there are only two genders. We've even seen homosexuals that are now getting banned because if they refuse to add the T along to the LGB, and we have this big split within Stonewall at the moment, the big homosexual rights advocacy organisation, and the homosexuals in it are all leaving because this new definition of homosexuality, it means attracted to your own gender. And of course, the lesbians are saying, well, we're not attracted to people with penises that claim to be women. It's a biological thing. It's to do with your sex, not to do with your gender. That's what the word is, homosexual. So you have all these issues now, which we didn't really have 10 years ago when it was the BNP, and of course the BNP were on Question Time, weren't they? And they tried to deplatform them, but they had to have them on Question Time. But they banned them from these universities, essentially, because they called the BNP fascist. So they were just using ad hominems. The need for a bill, this comes from Toby Young's Free Speech Union. They've done a lot of work on this. They say a 2017 report into academic freedom in the UK, commissioned by the University and College Union, Britain's largest academic trade union, found that the constitutional and legal protections for academic free speech were weaker in the UK than in all but one other EU member state. And that's going to be a left-wing union that is doing this survey. It's a trade union, so it will be a left-wing union. The majority of the academics are left-wing. Back when this survey was done, the UK was then a member of the EU. And you think about that, it was the lowest in all but one other EU member state. The researchers, two academics at the University of Lincoln, assigned a score to all 28 member states based on how well academic free speech was protected in each one. The EU average was 53%, and that is still very low, isn't it? It's, you know, it's down there at half. And the UK score was 35%, the second lowest. So it's two-thirds low, rather than being 100%. I mean, free speech should be protected 100%. You shouldn't have a third of free speech or a half of free speech. You should have full free speech within the law. The researchers conducted a Europe-wide survey, and 23.1% of the UK respondents reported being bullied on account of their academic views, compared to an EU average of 14%. Even more alarmingly, 35.5% admitted to self-censorship for fear of loss of privileges, demotion, or even physical harm. And the EU average was 19.1%. So twice as many people in Britain as the EU average at universities admitted to self-censorship because they were worried they were actually going to get beaten up if they actually voiced their views. And the university is supposed to be a place where there is a plurality of views. You're supposed to hear all different sorts of views, and you're supposed to have your own views challenged. That's the whole point of being there at university and trying to get to the truth of a matter, trying to get to the facts of a matter. You have to hear both sides of the argument in order to come to an informed view of what the subject of the argument is actually about and what it all means and the position that you should take on it. You have to hear all sides. You have to be objective, and that's what these students should be exposed to when they go to these universities. But of course, they're not. They're too frightened to actually speak up. The academics are too frightened to speak up. The students are too frightened to speak up. And more of the lecturers at these universities become left-wing. I think it's something like 80 or 90% now of the university lecturers are all left-wing. And if they speak up about being right-wing, then they get the sack. They get kicked out of the university. You have to wait until you've got tenure before you can actually say anything that really bucks the orthodoxy, like Professor Kevin MacDonald. I mean, he had tenure at his university, which means that they cannot get rid of him for whatever views that he holds. And then he was able to do his work on evolutionary psychology on the Jews. Otherwise, he would not have been able to do that and remain as a professor, because he would have been deplatformed for having this view that challenged the orthodoxy. A 2020 report by the think tank Policy Exchange found a significant lack of viewpoint diversity at universities. Think about it. We're told diversity is such a strength, and it is a strength when it's a diversity of viewpoint, but it is the actual diversity of viewpoint that these universities are trying to get rid of. The report found that fewer than 20% of staff at British universities voted for right-leaning parties, with 75% voting for left-leaning parties. That was 2017 to 2019. So you say 80% are now left-wing, 8 out of 10 of them. Only 54% of academics said they would feel comfortable sitting next to someone at lunch who was known to have voted leave in the 2016 referendum. Think about that. Just because somebody voted, just because somebody has different politics to you, that they wanted to leave the European Union, half of the academics at a university would not want to sit next to you. They would not want to share their lunch with you. I mean, that is absolutely disgusting. I mean, I don't know anybody right-wing or nationalist that would refuse to sit down and break bread with somebody because of their political views. I mean, we all know people that are on the left. We all have friends that don't hold the same views as us. And yet these academics are saying they would not sit next to somebody at lunch who held a different political view, such a mildly different political view as leaving the European Union. I mean, wanting to leave the European Union does not mean that you're an ethno-nationalist. It doesn't mean you're a white supremacist. I mean, there were lots of non-whites that wanted to leave the European Union, and yet these academics are saying we would not sit next to you if you were a Brexiteer. Just 37% would feel comfortable sitting next to an individual who expressed gender-critical views on trans rights. So if somebody said there are only two genders, male and female, and that you cannot actually change your sex because you are born with either XY chromosomes or XX chromosomes, 60% of these academics would feel uncomfortable sitting next to you. They would not want to sit next to you. They would want you to go and sit at the back of the bus. I mean, it is just like this story that we told about civil rights in America, isn't it? About the black woman that was told that she had to sit at the back of the bus because she was black, because she wasn't supposed to sit next to the white people. And you've got the same thing here, haven't you? You've got these academics saying, we don't want to sit next to you to have our lunch. You have to go and sit somebody else because you have a different opinion to me. Academics' career prospects through grant applications and promotion were also seen to be adversely affected by discrimination based on their views. So if you're trying to do research into some of these taboo topics to find out whether there is any truth behind them, you're just not going to get the funds to do that. You're not going to get a grant to investigate differences between races. I mean, even in science now, I forget which science magazine it was, that a few months back made an announcement that any scientific studies that actually showed differences between groups were not to be referred to, that were not to be talked about. So they're effectively silencing an entire aspect of humanity that really should be investigated. A 2020 Servation poll conducted on behalf of ADF International found that 20% of students at British universities had hidden their opinions when they were at odds with those of their peers and tutors, with more than half of those self-censoring because of their non-conformist political views. And the whole point of the university is that they should be able to talk about their views and debate their views with the other side. But they're frightened of getting beaten up, physically beaten up, if they actually say that they have this different view, that probably the same view as their grandparents, which is a different view to these left-wing activists at the university. A further 40% withheld their opinions on ethical or religious subjects for fear of being judged negatively by their peers. So you cannot say that you're a committed Christian. Pretty much half of people here say that they could not admit to being a committed Christian because they would be judged negatively for being so. Two-fifths of the respondents said that no platforming had become more frequent at their universities. So in order for it to become more frequent, then they must have actually seen it happening. So that's about half of them have seen people no platform from a university for having a different viewpoint, not for breaking the law, not for breaking the laws about speech or anything, but just for having a different political viewpoint. Let's have a look at some famous incidents here. After student societies at Oxford University deplatformed the history professor Selena Todd and a former Home Secretary Amber Rudd in February and March 2020, the Secretary of State for Education Gavin Williamson warned that the government would move to defend free speech if universities failed to do so themselves. And Amber Rudd actually had a court case taken out against her when the Conservative government said that they wanted to make a hostile environment for illegal immigrants. That got reported to the police because you're not allowed to be hostile to people based on protected characteristics. But of course, being a migrant or an illegal migrant is not a protected characteristic. So she was not singling people out on race there, saying she wanted to be hostile to people because of their race. She was saying she wanted a hostile environment for illegal immigrants. And of course, with that UN migration compact that Britain signed up to under Theresa May, in that it says that the government should change these hate speech rulings to include migrant and being a migrant as one of these protected characteristics. So under the UN compact for migration that Theresa May signed up to, they're going to change these definitions. They're going to expand the reach of these hate speech laws so that even what Amber Rudd said there would be considered as hate speech. And of course, Amber Rudd is the complete opposite of an ethno-nationalist. The Huffington Post reported soon afterwards that the government was preparing a law to protect freedom of speech in higher education, fulfilling the Conservative Party's manifesto pledge in the 2019 general election to strengthen academic freedom and free speech in universities. And that's great that they are actually honouring one of their manifesto pledges. I think that's only about the first time I've ever heard of them actually honouring one of their pledges. A Department for Education spokesperson stated at the time that the government had made it clear that if universities do not uphold free speech, the government will. And of course, these universities are now saying, well, this is going to be overreached by the government and it's going to have a chilling effect on free speech because it means that they are not going to be able to deplatform people that they disagree with. They think free speech is their right to protest and get rid of other people and ban them from speaking. That's what they think their right to free speech is. But what this bill will do, it will make sure that the university provides protection for a speaker that has controversial views, and the universities will have to make sure that he's able to give his speech, and they will also have to make sure that the people protesting are able to protest, which is the way that it should be. In March 21, David Miller, a professor at the University of Bristol, was put under investigation after making controversial remarks on Zionism, another incident that raised concerns over academic freedom. Lord Parkinson, on behalf of the government, stated in response that universities are independent and autonomous organisations with the responsibility to determine the limits of lawful free speech for themselves, although the government condemned Miller's comments. So you always have people that are complaining about people criticizing Zionism because you have this new definition of anti-Semitism, which says that you can't criticize Zionism, basically, whereas Zionism is a political ideology. You're not actually criticizing people themselves. You're not singling people out but for their religion or for their race. It's a political ideology. If Zionism was just limited to Israel, it wouldn't be such an issue. But we have this issue with international Zionism, where we have support for Israeli policies encouraged by these pro-Zionist politicians within European countries at the expense of the European countries. Some of them will, like in America, you'll see there's bipartisan support for Israel, regardless of what Israel does. People might not be happy about the way that Israel treats the Palestinians, but they don't actually have any representation because all these politicians are signed up to supporting Zionism. And that's the issue. Really, they should be signed up to supporting the nations that they are from. They should be saying, I'm committed. I'm a committed British nationalist and I'm looking out for the interests of the British. But they don't. They say, I am a committed Zionist. And I support Zionism. And it wouldn't be a problem for them to say, well, I support Zionism just as much as I support every other nationalism in the world. But they don't. They single out Zionism. The government confirmed in February 21 that legislation would soon be brought forward to protect freedom of speech and academic freedom in universities. And they published a policy paper outlining its intended approach. Titled the Higher Education Freedom of Speech Bill, the proposed law was formally announced at the 2021 State Opening of Parliament on the 11th of May, 2021. The bill would create a statutory tort, enabling individuals to sue for compensation for losses suffered from an academic institution's failure to protect freedom of speech. For the first time, it would extend universities' obligation to protect freedom of speech. Established in Section 43 of the Education No. 2 Act 1986, to student unions. In addition, it would institute an Office of Director for Freedom of Speech and Academic Freedom, informally the free speech champion, as an ombudsman to sit on the board of the Education Department's Office for Students and monitor potential infringements, such as deplatforming incidents and politically motivated academic dismissals. The bill would also establish a duty for the Office for Students to promote freedom of speech and empower it to fine infringing institutions. So they have to promote free speech, they have to promote these controversial views. In the debate following its announcement in the 2021 Queen's Speech, the Labour Party's Shadow Education Secretary, Kate Green, questioned whether the bill would protect Holocaust deniers, and a Conservative former minister, Edward Lee, suggested that it could have unintended consequences, arguing that free speech should be governed by good manners rather than by laws. The Prime Minister's office subsequently rebuked Michelle Donnellan, the university's minister, for failing to deny categorically that the bill would force universities to host Holocaust deniers. And it wouldn't force the universities to do that. What it is doing is it is protecting the academics' right at the universities to invite who they wish to the university. Now, you might get an academic historian who might invite an alternative historian to the university, possibly, to talk about their research into World War II. But so long as that was done in a sympathetic way towards the Jews, then that would not be hate speech and it would not be Holocaust denial. And this is the thing, that they conflate historical revisionism with Holocaust denial. But of course, Holocaust denial implies that you are denying that bad things happened to the Jews in World War II. And if you're doing that, then you're obviously not being sympathetic to the Jews. So they could say, well, that was hate speech. But if you were talking about it in a way that was sympathetic to the Jews, then they couldn't say that that was hate speech. And that's why this minister was not saying, oh, yes, well, we won't be allowed to have Holocaust denial there. It's because legitimate historical research gets called Holocaust denial when it may not be unsympathetic to the Jews. That's the bit there that would mean that it was actually denial. So you end up with these conservative politicians saying, oh no, well, we wouldn't have Holocaust denial, that's absolutely forbidden. But then you've got other people that will say, well, no, actually, in Britain we don't have Holocaust denial laws. We don't have these specific laws against denial of the Holocaust, but we do have laws which show that we should not be hostile to any groups based on their protected characteristics. So if you were to be talking about the Holocaust in a certain way that was not sympathetic to the Jews, then that would be breaking the law. I mean, that's the difference there, I think. A joint letter from the Freedom of Expression campaign groups, Index on Censorship English PEN and Article 19, on the 11th of May 2021, criticised the bill, arguing that the threat of fines was likely to diminish rather than enhance freedom of speech at universities and would create a chilling effect on the content of academic teaching and the scope of research. And of course, that's a media advocacy group. This is the mainstream media here, which are complaining about this. And they're saying it's going to diminish free speech because it will prevent these protest groups from banning somebody else from speaking there. And they think that's freedom of speech. It's their right to just use force to prevent somebody else from speaking. This heckler's veto, I think that it is called. And it's the heckler's veto that is going to be removed by this legislation. Writing in the Daily Telegraph, the Birkbeck Politics Professor and Policy Exchange Fellow Eric Kaufman welcomed the bill as recognising that the university's highest value is the search for truth, not the subjectively defined emotional safety of students, and noted that it drew on previous recommendations by the Policy Exchange. So there is an admittance that the university's highest value is the search for truth. And the only way you're going to get to the truth is through impassioned debate. Let's have a look at what the higher education sector have to say. Of course, they're not happy about it. They don't want it. Joe Grady, General Secretary of the University and College Union, a trade union for higher education staff, described the bill as a serious threat to freedom of speech and academic freedom, and argued that the government had over-exaggerated the issues motivating the bill. Spokespeople for the Russell Group of Universities and Universities UK stated that the bill should be proportionate and avoid creating unnecessary bureaucracy, infringing university autonomy, or duplicating existing laws, though the Russell Group shared the government's goal of protecting free expression. Of course, they're saying, oh, well, we already have laws for free speech, but the universities are not upholding it. They are not upholding these laws for free speech. They are banning people from speaking there. The bill met a mixed reception among academics. Jonathan Grant, a public policy professor at King's College London, who authored a 2019 study cited by the government in preparing the legislation, termed the bill excessive and over the top, and criticised the government for conflating the chilling effect of censorship with cancel culture. Well, that is what cancel culture is, isn't it? It is censorship. It is people being deplatformed. They're not just being deplatformed from the university. They're being deplatformed from the banking system. They're being deplatformed from social media. And we need to have reinforcement of free speech here. Not speech that is against the law, but speech that is within the law. I mean, the government are saying they're going to bring this bill out to protect free speech in universities. But at the same time, they're bringing out their online safety bill, which comes out with this new phrase of legal but harmful, and means that you can ban speech on the internet that you would be completely legal to talk about off the internet. So the government are doing a good thing with this bill, but at the same time, they're actually limiting free speech with their online safety bill. And thankfully, the online safety bill has now been paused because some politicians have actually spoken up about this. The Cambridge philosophy lecturer, Arif Ahmed, who led a successful campaign in 2020 to overturn a proposed free speech code at the university demanding respect for others' identities, called the bill extremely welcome, although he added that a top-down approach is never going to be a complete solution. Well, the government has to step in because these universities are not doing this. And getting back to where we started with this, yesterday we were looking at this decolonise the curriculum movement that is in these universities, which is partially why this bill has to come about, because the decolonise the curriculum are deplatforming people because of their views, they're changing the curriculum, and that's the reason why we have to actually have this bill. Well, in response to the Mail's findings of the extent to which the decolonise the curriculum movement has colonised our universities, Susan Lapworth, the chief executive of the Office for Students, said universities decide the content of their courses and must meet our expectations for rigour and high quality. In doing so, they have a duty to take steps to secure free speech within the law. This matters because robust debate of ideas, including on difficult topics, is fundamental to higher education. Once again, what they're doing is they pay a lip service to free speech, but they don't support it. That's the Office for Students saying, well, we have to have a robust debate of ideas. But then you get a Newcastle University spokesman who said it made a pledge to decolonise our dentistry curriculum following discussions with students. So instead of talking about dentistry, they're going to talk about how dentistry is linked to slavery. An Edinburgh spokesman said it was committed to addressing contemporary and historic inequalities with respect to race. So Edinburgh University is now going to make everything about race. A Sheffield spokesman said decolonisation was not about removing any historical figures or factual knowledge from the curriculum, but about ensuring a subject is representative of a wider range of academics who have contributed. But that's not it, is it? They're removing people from the curriculum and replacing them with non-whites into the curriculum, purely for ideological reasons. A spokesman for Bayes said it had sought the views of our students on these issues and it was committed to a freedom of expression. Cambridge and York said they had consulted students on diversifying their curriculums and Exeter declined to comment. So all of these universities are decolonising the curriculum. They're all encouraging the deplatforming of people for having different views. So we really do need to have this bill protecting free speech in universities. I mean, it would be so much better if we had a bill that would protect free speech, not just in universities, but everywhere else, saying that everywhere has to protect free speech within the law, not just the universities, but social media companies, banks, employers. I mean, it is implied in our constitution and in our laws that free speech should be protected, but it is not being protected. It's not being protected by these social media companies that are deplatforming people for having a different point of view, or banks that are removing banking facilities from people because they don't like their politics. We need protection for this. So at least this is a good step with the universities. They're trying to reinforce free speech and promote free speech in the British universities. So this is something that we can actually thank the Conservatives for, surprisingly enough. That's if it actually makes its way all the way through to royal approval. As I say, it's at the committee stage at the House of Lords, has a report stage and a third reading to go before it gets passed back to the House of Commons for amendments, and then finally royal assent. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk radio for the nationalist community.